headlines, Iran and China sign a comprehensive partnership pact during the Chinese top diplomat's visit to Tehran. Lebanon's largest Christian bloc warns Prime Minister-designate Hariri against sidelining a President Aoun and other parliamentary blocs in talks over cabinet formation. And Germany registers 157 more coronavirus-related deaths and over 20,000 new cases. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumisha Ahmadi, and these are top stories this hour. Iran and China have signed a cooperation pact dubbed the Sino-Iranian Comprehensive Strategic Partnership. The deal was signed by the foreign ministers of both countries in Tehran. It includes cooperation in political, strategic, and economic fields. The terms of the pact were finalized during a meeting with Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi and Ali Larijani, who was Iran's representative for pursuing the agreement. The Chinese official also met with President Hassan Rouhani during his visit. Political commentator James O'Neill says besides the importance of the Sino-Iranian cooperation agreement, the pact sends a message that Iran is a vital part of the world's economy and should not be treated unjustly.
Well, this is an incredibly important agreement that is being reached. It was initiated by the Chinese President Xi Jinping when he visited Tehran a couple of years ago. But primarily, it is a way of saying to the Americans that regardless of your illegal sanctions, the relationship between China and Iran is going to get stronger. And that's what's significant about this project. I think that it's a way of China telling the world that Iran is being treated unjustly. They do not accept its isolation by the United States, which is illegal. And China's agreement with Iran, which is going to cover the next 25 years, don't forget that's a very significant period in terms of world history. The China is saying that Iran should not be isolated, that if you want to be part of the world economy, then Iran is a vital part of that and should be taken proper notice of. So I think other countries will follow China's example, particularly its near neighbour like Turkey, other countries in the Middle East, and Russia have also signalled they're not going to participate in this American farce any longer of isolating Iran.
In Lebanon, the largest Christian bloc has warned Prime Minister-designate Saad Hariri against sidelining President Michel Aoun and other parliamentary blocs in cabinet negotiations. In a statement, the Free Patriotic Movement warned about the dangers of sidelining methods that Hariri is using when dealing with the president and concerned parliamentary blocs. The party also accused Hariri of trying to orchestrate a majority for his own supporters. This day, after the 18th meeting between Aoun and Hariri failed to reach an agreement over the formation of a cabinet. The Arab country has been struggling with a political crisis since August 10, when the government of then Prime Minister Hassan Diab resigned amid mounting public anger and protests over a deadly blast in Beirut. March 28 marks the sixth anniversary of the Saudi-led war on Yemen. Rallies have been held across Yemen to mark the occasion against the backdrop of the Yemeni army's increased retaliatory attacks.
On Friday, thousands of Yemenis rallied across the country to show their support for the popular Ansarullah movement and reiterate their strong resistance in the face of the devastating Saudi-led military campaign as the Yemen war entered its seventh year. People from all walks of life gathered in Sabine Square in central Sana'a since the early hours of Friday morning, waving the red, white, and black national flags. They chanted slogans against Saudi Arabia, which leads the military coalition against Yemen, and denounced U.S. support for it. Yemenis say the seventh year of the war will mark a departure from the rest, as the army has ramped up its retaliatory attacks against Saudi targets and made significant advances against Saudi-backed mercenaries. The recent spate of attacks seems to have had an impact on Saudi's policy in Yemen. Last week, Prince Faisal bin Farhan Al Saud presented a so-called peace initiative to end the conflict in Yemen, which would include reopening Sana'a's airport and allowing fuel and food imports through Hodeidah port, both of which are under the control of Ansarullah movement. The Ansarullah movement, however, dismissed the plan as fruitless unless the war ends and the years-long siege on Yemen is lifted.
It does appear that Saudi Arabia is attempting to withdraw. It has lost, of course, significant support from the United States for its war effort. So the fact that it has requested another ceasefire, although this is one that has been mentioned in the past unsuccessfully, but the fact they're bringing it up again at this time does indicate that Saudi Arabia sees that it is in a never-ending war that it cannot win.
Yemen says it will press on with its attacks until the other side puts an end to its aggression.
The Saudi-led military aggression has left tens of thousands of Yemenis dead and displaced, and millions more. That has also destroyed the infrastructure and spread famine and infectious diseases across the country, creating what the United Nations has called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The situation has become so dire that the U.S., a close ally of Riyadh and its main backer during the war, has curtailed its military support for the coalition. But it appears that the decision has been made too little, too late.
This war has to end. And to underscore our commitment, we're ending all American support for offensive operations in the war in Yemen, including relevant arms sales.
The announcement raised hopes that Saudi hostilities against Yemen would end soon, but even that couldn't stop the Saudis from keeping up their onslaught on the war-ravaged country. While former U.S. President Donald Trump maintained close relationships with Saudi officials, including Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, and provided Riyadh with abundant support, his predecessor, Barack Obama, wasn't free from blame either, as the Yemen war broke out during his administration when Joe Biden was serving as the vice president. Saudi Arabia, backed by the U.S. and its other regional allies, launched a devastating military campaign on Yemen in March 2015 with the goal of bringing Riyadh-backed former president Abdurrabbuh Mansour Hadi's government back to power and crushing the popular Ansarullah movement. That goal has not been fulfilled thanks to the resistance put up by Ansarullah throughout 6 years of indiscriminate war and blockade. What Saudi Arabia assumed to be a short conflict turned to an all-out war, killing hundreds of thousands and displacing millions.
The U.S. has always been as guilty as the Saudis because it has supported the war. It has provided Saudi Arabia with billions of dollars of weaponry, which has been used to slaughter the Yemeni people. This has continued. The United States has withdrawn some of the sales that it has made to Saudi Arabia, but it continues with some others. So it isn't as if it has stopped the flow of weapons to Saudi Arabia, weapons that that country is using to attempt to destroy Yemen. So the United States is complicit in this, as it has been from the start. This is nothing new, just because it's a new administration. The Biden administration mirrors the policies in this regard of the Trump administration, of the Obama administration, of the Clinton, Bush, going all the way back decades. The United States is a war-making and war-mongering nation. It supports wars of its allies if it will in some way enhance its profits and power throughout the world. This hasn't changed with Biden. It won't change with Biden. It's tragic, but the Yemeni people are continuing to fight and will until they are free.
Observers believe the Biden administration can only show its seriousness in ending the conflict by placing additional pressure on the Saudis to cease the violence and seek a diplomatic solution. Whether or not the U.S. is willing to do that to its regional ally is anybody's guess.
Moving on, Germany has registered over 20,000 new coronavirus infections as it struggles against the third wave of the pandemic. According to the Robert Koch Institute for Infectious Diseases, Germany also reported 157 COVID-19 fatalities over the past day. This takes the death toll closer to 76,000. The country has so far reported over 2.7 million cases. Health experts have warned that Germany could see 100,000 infections a day if the third wave of the coronavirus spreads unchecked. Germany's intensive care doctors have called for a two-week hard lockdown in order to avoid overwhelming the healthcare system. Chancellor Angela Merkel reversed plans for a strict lockdown over the Easter holidays just a day after the measure was announced. France has accused Britain of blackmail over the coronavirus vaccine exports amid a growing row over jab supply in Europe.
We cannot deal this way and play blackmail insofar as we wanted to vaccinate without stopping for the first dose, and now we find ourselves a bit handicapped for the second dose. Europe does not have to pay the cost of these policies.
French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian called on the European Union to control exports of the AstraZeneca vaccine. He expressed hope that the EU and the UK can reach an agreement so that the British-Swedish AstraZeneca company can fulfill its vaccine deliveries. The vaccination programs have been sluggish across Europe. The EU blames pharmaceutical companies for inability to deliver the promised doses. The bloc has warned to ban AstraZeneca vaccines exports to provide the EU with required doses. Iran has reported over 8,000 new coronavirus cases and 85 more related deaths. According to the health ministry, 815 infected people have been hospitalized over the past day. This is while 1.6 million people have recovered from the disease. The number of new cases and deaths in Iran has sharply dropped since November, when the country imposed tough restrictions to curb the pandemic. However, officials have sounded the alarm over complacency and laxity in following health protocols, as well as the spread of the more contagious and deadly variants of the virus. On Saturday, Tehran was designated as a high risk in terms of transmission. Travel to and from the capital has been banned. Iran has so far registered over 1.8 million infections and more than 62,000 deaths. Belarusian officials have warned people against public demonstrations threatening disobeyers with criminal prosecution. The warning came ahead of an expected new round of protests. Armored vehicles and police buses have been moved into the center of the capital, Minsk, in preparation for potential demonstrations. Belarus has been the scene of protests since the presidential election back in August 2019. The vote was won by longtime President Alexander Lukashenko. The opposition rejects the election results as rigged. The government has dismissed the allegation and accused the West of stoking artificial tensions in Belarus. Opposition figures have recently called on the supporters to ramp up rallies after a two-month pause. And in Myanmar, more than 90 people have been reportedly killed during fresh clashes in one of the deadliest protests since last month's military coup. Some 30 people died in the country's second largest city, Mandalay, and 24 in the commercial capital, Yangon. Myanmar has been in turmoil since the army toppled the de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, in a coup on February the 1st. The military argued that the November election, won by Suu Kyi's party, was fraudulent. The election commission denies that. Security forces have used tear gas, rubber bullets, and live rounds against anti-coup protesters. So far, more than 400 people have been killed in the unrest. Local commentator Hin Won Win has been saying that Myanmar's military has no respect for international regulations and resorts to violence to maintain its grip on power.
I personally have not depended on the international community, especially the United Nations, you know. But the lying people in the streets, they call for RQP and UN intervention and all that. I feel very sorry for them, you know. Well, at least the European Union and the United States have responded with sanctions and calls for release of the people and for downgrading of the violence. But it's falling on deaf ears. Listen, please, if I may, tell me just one point. We are dealing with a very brutal and recalcitrant and a regime that knows no bounds, doesn't recognize anything in the way of international regulations and conventions. So it's a very primitive standoff, you know, the unarmed people against a brutal, well-armed security forces that don't care about people's lives. It's really desperate.
Police in Bangladesh say 5 people have been killed during violent demonstrations against the visit by Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Officials say 4 protesters were shot dead in Hathari on Friday. Another protester was killed in Brahmanbaria after police opened fire at demonstrators. Clashes also erupted between police and protesters in the capital, Dhaka. The government has already beefed up security, deploying border guards across the country. Bangladesh has been the scene of anti-Modi protests in recent days. Modi is visiting Bangladesh on the 50th anniversary of its independence from Pakistan. The Bangladeshis accuse him of inciting religious tensions and anti-Muslim violence in India. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The war of words with the European Union over vaccines has escalated as France's foreign minister claimed Britain will struggle to source second COVID jabs, but that Brussels would not be blackmailed into exporting doses to solve the problem. Jean-Yves Le Drian, a close political ally of French President Emmanuel Macron, claimed that the United Kingdom's success had been built on driving forward with first jabs without having secured the second doses of vaccine necessary for full vaccination. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian columnists Daniel Buffy and Heather Stewart. The piece is titled, France Claims UK Will Struggle to Source Second COVID Jabs. Stay with us for more of Daniel Buffy and Heather Stewart's article. The war of words with the European Union over vaccines has escalated as France's Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian claimed Britain will struggle to source second COVID jabs, but that Brussels would not be blackmailed into exporting doses to solve the problem. The French Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian, a close political ally of President Emmanuel Macron, claimed that the United Kingdom's success had been built on driving forward with the first jabs, without having secured the second doses necessary for full vaccination. The intervention came as the European Union and the United Kingdom are locked in talks about the fate of the Oxford-AstraZeneca jabs, produced in a factory in the Netherlands, over which both sides are laying claim. Sources said that despite conciliatory language earlier in the week over finding a solution, the two sides were struggling to find common ground. In an interview with France Info Radio, Jean-Yves Le Drian suggested that the European Union should not have to lose out on the doses to help Britain with a problem of its own making. European Union officials and top-ranked politicians have repeatedly said they will block any export requests by AstraZeneca. The United Kingdom is proud to have vaccinated many people with the first dose, but they will have a problem with the second dose, Le Drian claimed. And we are fully vaccinated with two doses, not one. Today we have the same number of fully vaccinated people in France and the United Kingdom. A cooperative relationship must be found with the United Kingdom so that AstraZeneca fulfills its signed commitments with the European Union, but we can't accept any sort of blackmail. The United Kingdom is pushing for the first jab, knowing there will be problems with the second one. Europe does not have to pay for the price of this policy. The French government did not respond to requests for evidence for Jean-Yves Le Drian's claims. Thierry Breton, the European Union's Commissioner for the Internal Market, who has been given responsibility for increasing vaccine production, also warned on Friday. Thierry Breton said, "We have the tools and we'll make sure everything stays in Europe until the company will come back to its commitments." British government sources say the delivery of second doses of the vaccine in the United Kingdom could still be carried out ahead of schedule, even if shipments from the Dutch plant are blocked, although they're keen to avoid that eventuality. "Factoring in all the challenges, we still think we can meet the targets set out," said an official. According to the British government's latest data, 55% of adults aged over the age of 18 have received a first jab and 5.3% have received a second dose of the vaccine. The speed of the government's rollout was in part based on the decision in early January to prioritise the first dose of a vaccine, with a second dose up to 12 weeks later, a larger gap than originally planned. Earlier this month, Prime Minister Boris Johnson said the United Kingdom had sufficient supplies to ensure that people would be given their second jabs on time. Boris Johnson said, "We will have the second doses that people need within the 12-week window, which means around 12 million people in April." People in the United Kingdom are receiving doses of two vaccines approved by the medicine regulator. The Pfizer-BioNTech jab, of which 20 million doses have so far been imported from Belgium, and the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine. The Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine is sourced from two UK sites in Oxford and in Kiel Science Park in Staffordshire, along with the Serum Institute of India and the Helix plant in the Dutch city of Leiden. British sites have, however, suffered yield problems, leaving the United Kingdom with only 30% of expected deliveries in the first quarter of this year. There have also been delays to expected deliveries from India. And on Thursday, the Indian government ordered the Serum Institute to halt exports until all local needs were met. Britain's National Health Service has warned vaccination centres that the number of people getting the first dose of their COVID-19 jab will be constrained for 4 weeks, from 29th of March, as a result of a significant reduction in vaccine supply available. The British government has said it is prioritising the 9 priority high-risk groups and second doses of vaccine, but that it is on track to offer a first jab to every adult in Britain by the end of July. Officials are, however, insistent that the United Kingdom has the contractual right to the significant number of doses of the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine in the Netherlands. The next conference call between the European Union and British officials is expected on Saturday. The two sides have said they're seeking a win-win outcome, but sources confirm that the differences in position were stark. A European Commission spokesperson said the discussions with the United Kingdom are ongoing. We do not have any comments to make at the moment on the content of those discussions. But as you know, our common aim is to ensure that we have a good cooperation in terms of supply chains, in terms of producing the vaccine. We have noted that the India decision. I have no comment to make on the link between the Indian decision and any discussions underway with the government of the United Kingdom. In a sign of the difficulty of the issue, on Thursday evening, following a virtual summit of European Union leaders, both the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen and the French President Emmanuel Macron insisted they would not allow AstraZeneca, which has only delivered to the EU 30 million doses of the expected 120 million vaccine this quarter, to export to the United Kingdom. Companies have to honour their contract to the European Union before they're allowed to export to other regions of the world. This is, of course, the case with AstraZeneca, Ursula von der Leyen said. She added, I think it is clear that the company, AstraZeneca, has to catch up and honour the contract it has with the European Union before it can engage again in exporting vaccines. French President Emmanuel Macron told reporters in Paris, he said, I support the fact that we must block all exports for as long as some drug companies don't respect their commitments with Europeans.
This is for a better life. For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, we send our peace and blessings upon all the prophets of Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala, and especially the last of them, Muhammadul Mustafa and his progeny, and those companions who followed their path. I'm your host, Sayyid Wahid Alawi, and welcome to another program of For a Better Life, here on IRIB English Radio. We were talking about psychological diseases that we can feel within ourselves. Some of us may have bad self-confidence. Some of us may have traumas, some of us may have other psychological diseases and other hardships and difficulties in our family, in our spouse relationship, what we feel in our careers and our job and working place, and many, many other things. These are things that we were talking about in previous programs and how we should deal with it. A psychologist by the name of Jung, he says, among all my patients in the second half of life, that is to say over 35, there has not been one whose problem in the last resort was not that of finding a religious outlook on life. It is safe to say that every four of them fell ill because he or she had lost that which the living religions of every age have given to their followers. And none of them has been really healed who did not regain his religious outlook. Here then, the clergyman stands before a vast horizon. Instead of clergyman, we could also say the sheikh, the imam of the community. It is indeed high time for the clergyman and the psychotherapist to join forces to meet this great spiritual task. Now, this is Jung, a man who did not believe in any religion. He says this, and he admits, and he also recognizes the clergymen, the scholars of the deen, and their spiritual powers. And he says that we should join forces to help people in the modern age. In a world where materialism and individualism has taken over, skepticism and relativism has taken over, people feel a hollow or emptiness within themselves that they cannot comprehend. And all of that goes back to spirituality, dear brothers and sisters. And the main cause why people feel like that is because of our cultures, especially in the Western world, where we have the ideology of postmodernism, where no truth is realized or recognized. There is no absolute truth. Everything is relative. Even reason is not something that you can rely on. When you have this kind of ideology that prevails, that dominates in the society, then you will have these psychological diseases in our society. But the faith in Allah, in God, in Jehovah, in Brahman, whatever you want to call it, is like a relief. It helps to regulate psychic urges, which are themselves the mainspring of man's spiritual afflictions. The faith in God gives a visage of perfect beauty to life that you can only feel if you really go for it. If you attain it, you have to see it by yourself. When I say see it or feel it, I'm not talking about the physical senses. I'm talking about the spiritual seeing, the spiritual feeling.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
The faith in God gives a visage of perfect beauty to life. because when one has the conviction that everything, dear brothers and sisters, will be all right, there is a higher power that will help you, everything ultimately will be all right. He is the all watchful. He is Raqib. Huwa Raqib. He is the all watchful. He sees all your difficulties and your hardships and your calamities. When one has this conviction, and the conviction that everything does not come to an end with this life, that conviction, dear brothers and sisters, creates an inner peace, serenity, tranquility, and makes us traverse the entire course of life with steadiness and moderation. Greed and false desires and false goals, which are one or many of those factors responsible for anxiety, stress, are moderated as a result of faith in God. That will help you to moderate, to manage those stress factors, those psychological stress factors that you feel within yourself, the faith in God, and observance of the moral precepts of religion, the hope of great rewards, and the fear of severe punishments make man refrain from those immoralities that prevail in our society and avoid unreasonable and uncontrolled fondness for material things, window shoppings, all those hours being spent for shopping when you don't even need those things. And at the end of the year, you see that your wardrobe has become filled with clothes and other tools and things that you just used once, twice, or thrice and never used anymore. This nafs of ours will never be satisfied. It just wants more and more. And that is the carnal soul. That is the nafs that you need to control. So try to avoid unreasonable and uncontrolled fondness for material things. Glitter. As a result, if you do that, if we prevail, as a result, a desirable and serene feeling will develop within us, worthy of man's humanity, and that feeling is brought about within our spirit. Similarly, faith in the resurrection and afterlife removes the intolerable strain induced by the idea of absolute annihilation and extinction from the human spirit. More of that, inshallah ta'ala, in the future programs. Thank you for joining us in this program of For a Better Life. Till next time, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon you.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. All I need. All I need. It's all I need. It's all I need. It's all I need. All I need. All I need. All I need. Oh. All I need to be all I need, and I know that you see how much you mean to me. Cause your love is all I need to be all I can be, and I know that you see how much you mean to me. Cause your love is all I need to be all I can be.
Your love is all I need.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The fight over voting rights is emerging as one of the defining conflicts of the Biden era, and Georgia fired the opening shot with a set of new restrictions underscoring the political, legal and financial clashes that will influence whether Republicans retake Congress and the White House. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Nick Corazzaniti and Reed Epstein. The piece is titled "Georgia Law Kicks Off Partisan Battle Over Voting Rights." Stay with us for more of Nick Corazzaniti and Reed Epstein's article. The fight over voting rights is emerging as one of the defining conflicts of the Biden era, and Georgia fired the opening shot with a set of new restrictions underscoring the political, legal and financial clashes that will influence whether Republicans retake Congress and the White House. President Joe Biden on Friday, 26th of March, called Georgia's new law an attack on the Constitution and said the Justice Department was taking a look at Republican voting efforts in the state of Georgia, without offering any specifics. "This is Jim Crow in the 21st century. It must end," President Biden said a day after Governor Brian Kemp signed the bill into law. "I will take my case to the American people, including Republicans who joined the broadest coalition of voters ever in this past election, to put country before party. If you have the best ideas, you have nothing to hide. Let the people vote." Civil rights groups immediately challenged the Georgia law in federal courts, backed by prominent Democratic voting rights lawyers. Several black leaders described the legal skirmishes to come as an existential fight for representation, saying the law clearly puts a target on black and brown voters. Protests against voting restrictions unfolded this week in state capitals like Austin, Texas, and Atlanta, Georgia, and more lawsuits are expected. In more than 24 states, Republican-led legislatures are advancing bills in a broad political effort that is the most aggressive attack on right to vote since the civil rights movement of the 1960s. It follows months of Republican efforts to tarnish Joe Biden's presidential victory, which scores of high-level GOP officials still refuse to acknowledge as legitimate. Democrats, who have limited power in many state capitals, are looking to President Biden and congressional Democrats for a new federal law to protect voting. Many in the party see the fight over voting as not just a moral cause, but also a political cause, given their narrow margins of victory in presidential and Senate elections in Georgia, Arizona, and many other battleground states. Georgia's sweeping new provisions, passed by a Republican-controlled legislature, represent the most substantial overhaul of a battleground state's voting system since last November's election. It would impose stricter voting identification requirements for absentee balloting, limit drop boxes, and forbid giving water and snacks to voters waiting in line. But in a state where former President Donald Trump tried to persuade Republican election officials to reverse his loss, the measure went even further. It shifts the power and oversight of elections to the legislature by stripping the Secretary of State from chairing the State Board of Elections and authorizing the legislature to name members to the board. It further empowers the State Board of Elections to have sweeping jurisdiction over county election boards, including the authority to suspend officials. President Joe Biden on Friday, 26th of March, called Georgia's new voting restrictions un-American and sought to tie them to the Democrats' push in Washington to enact the Federal Voting Rights Bill, which the House of Representatives passed this month. The measure would put in place a raft of requirements intended to protect voting rights, including weakening restrictive state identification requirements, expanding early and mail-in voting, and restoring voting rights to former felons. The president said the new Georgia law was expressly what the House bill was designed to prevent. While Democrats in Congress debate abolishing the filibuster in order to pass the voting rights bill through the Senate, Republican legislators in more than 40 states have introduced hundreds of bills targeting voting access and seizing authority over administering elections. And another crucial conflict looms this autumn. The fight over redistricting to account for growing and changing populations, and the gerrymandering that will allow partisan majorities to limit the impact of votes by packing or splitting up population centers. The gerrymandering disputes will determine the look of the House and dozens of state legislatures in many cases locking in majorities for the next decade. Bitter struggles over voting rights loom even in states with Democratic governors who can veto the legislation. In Michigan, for example, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, Republican-controlled legislatures are planning to advance restrictive bills, and new Republican governors would most likely sign them into law if they're elected next year. The 2020 election is behind us, but the war over the future of our democracy is escalating, said Jocelyn Benson, a Democrat who is the Secretary of State in Michigan, where Republicans this week introduced numerous proposed restrictions on voting. For anyone to believe that they can sit down and rest because the 2020 election is behind need look no further than what happened in Georgia as an indication that our work is far from over. Republicans, borrowing language from their previous efforts at curtailing voting access, have described the new bills as a way to make voting easier while limiting fraud. Mr. Kemp, upon signing the bill into law, even said it would make it easier to vote and harder to cheat, even though the state's own Republican election officials found no substantive evidence of fraud in Georgia in November of 2020. Georgia Secretary of State Kemp on Friday, 26th of March, pushed back at President Biden's criticism, saying there is nothing Jim Crow about requiring a photo or state-issued ID to vote by absentee ballot. President Biden, the left, and the national media are determined to destroy the sanctity and security of the ballot box, Kemp said. As Secretary of State in Georgia, I consistently led the fight to protect Georgia elections against power-hungry partisan activists. Jessica Anderson, the executive director of Heritage Action for America, the political arm of the Conservative Heritage Foundation, said Georgia would serve as a model for other Republican-run states. The country was watching closely what Georgia would do, Jessica Anderson said in an interview. The fact that they were able to get these reforms through sets the tone and puts Georgia in a leadership role for other states. The Justice Department was aware of Georgia's voting law, a spokesman said on Friday, but provided no further comment. A White House official said the president, in his comments, was assuming this was an issue the Department of Justice would review. The department's Civil Rights Division would most likely have lawyers investigate whether to file an independent lawsuit, said Tom Perez, the former Labor Secretary who also previously ran the department's Civil Rights Division during the Obama administration. It could also take part in the case that was filed by civil rights groups by filing a so-called statement of interest in moving to intervene as the plaintiff, he said. But this is a precarious time for the federal protections in place. In 2013, the Supreme Court gutted one of the core provisions of the Voting Rights Act, clearing the way for much of the current legislation aimed at restricting voting. The remaining protection in Section 2 of the Act is facing a new challenge before the Supreme Court, with arguments heard last month. The debate is also spilling over into the corporate arena. Activists across the country have been chastising companies they see as silent on the issue of voting rights. In Georgia on Friday, numerous civil rights groups and faith leaders issued a call to boycott some of the standard bearers of the Georgia business community, including Coca-Cola, until they took action against the efforts to restrict voting access in Georgia.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters 7300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and IranSat or BAT 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day. on IRIB English Radio. We have been discussing a tradition from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, which is a very famous tradition known as tradition of Aql wa Jahl, or Junood Aql wa Jahl, the army of the intellect and the army of the ignorance. And there are many books written on this particular tradition, and obviously we do not have time or the knowledge to dive deep into those books. For example, one book that has been written on this particular hadith alone is that exposition by Imam al-Khomeini rahmatullah alayh on this particular hadith of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. This book unfortunately is available in Farsi and Arabic, and no one has had the guts to kind of translate such a brilliant book or such a difficult book into English. And there are many other books also available in Farsi and Arabic that have kind of dived into the depths of this tradition, or tried to get into the depths of this particular tradition. For as we say, that the Imam mentioned at the beginning of this tradition, that if you know these two armies, you will be guided. Again, not just merely knowing them, but acting upon that particular army that shows, and that particular unit that was in the army of the intellect. It is something to be acted upon, not just know it. Okay, I know, for example, this characteristic is a unit in the army of the intellect. I know it. Okay, so what? I have to act upon it. I have to, you know, use it to my advantage in order for me to achieve that guidance. And here the Imam continues and he says, when the intellect was created from light, at this moment Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala told it that go back. So it's a command from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, go back. And the Imam says that the intellect went back. Then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala commanded the intellect and said, come forward. Whereupon it came forward. So it obeyed the commands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala from the very initial point of its creation, according to the tradition from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said to all those creatures who were there at that moment in time when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created this being out of light, or this being of light, rather. Again, this is a very mystical interpretation, and obviously, like I mentioned, more advanced scholars or more advanced books may be referred to in this regard, but unfortunately none of them are in English. The scholars may be, the books are not. So then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said that to all those who are in that particular gathering, or in the presence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when this being of light was created, and it obeyed Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that I have made you great and I have honored you above all my creatures. So it is the intellect and our use of it that also will make us great and honored. Inshallah, until next time, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more. No.